Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know Employee Cycle, we're that company advocating and helping and looking out for all of you HR leaders at small and medium companies that want to become more data-driven, want to have a data-driven view across your employee lifecycle, and ultimately want to make smarter and more confident workforce decisions, yet you don't have the time, the resources, the skill set to be able to bring all your data together, turn it into beautiful charts, graphs, have the ability to quickly analyze it. Well, look no further, because that's why we created Employee Cycle, a people dashboard that has pre-built integration connectors to the most popular HR systems all of you are using. Systems like Namely, Bamboo HR, Zenefits, Trinet, ADP, Greenhouse, Lever, 15.5, you name it. You can connect all those systems to the People Dashboard so that we can pull in all your data for you to view, track, share, and analyze it all in one place. Check us out at employeecycle.com if you want to get set up with a demo. Would love to chat with you, or you can even set up a free trial and try it out for yourself. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Amy Ermentrout. She's the Director of HR and Culture at Kenway Consulting. And today we're going to discuss, how does a small company tackle diversity and inclusion? Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Amy!
All right, happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is your first podcast, so we're so excited to bring you into the podcast universe. So Amy, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
So for me, it has been, probably an interesting journey. So I work for a company of about 46 people, but started when we were a company of two. So really kind of had the opportunity to help grow the business. We are a consulting firm and, started out driving, consulting services. So being part of the mainstream consulting aspects of our business. But because we were a small business, everybody at the company was, helping with the operational side of things as well. So as the company grew, this is just something I had a passion around and have stayed heavily involved in the HR aspects of what we do. And at this point, running the facets of that organization.
Got it. So you said you're at around 46 employees?
Yes.
Great. So I think you are definitely qualified in discussing our topic today, which is, how does a small company tackle diversity and inclusion? So the question that I have for you today is, why do you think it's different for a small company to tackle such an important effort like D&I and handling social injustice than a bigger company? What's the biggest difference there?
I would assume, I'm not being part of a big company, but I would assume one of the biggest differentiators is just the amount of resources, both, monetary and from a people perspective that you have available. Although with that being said, I think it probably all scales. So as a small company, I think you need to ensure that you have the focus at the appropriate scale.
Got it. So as a small company under 50 employees, what does diversity and inclusion currently look like for you?
So for us, we think about it in what we term a few different areas of focus or work streams. So first and foremost, we have a work stream that we're focusing on called education and training. Small nuances between the two. Education is really focused around providing our employees resources that they can use to educate themselves on really what these topics mean. Training is a little bit more of something that we anticipate will be consistent and driven, top down across the organization. So maybe worded a different way, education is a little bit more voluntary in terms of things that are available to people versus training is consistent and mandatory across the organization. Second work stream that we're focusing on is around recruitment and how do we ensure that we are first and foremost going to places that are diverse as we recruit, and how can we actually, from a market-facing perspective, ensure that we have diverse candidates come to us as well. And then another area of focus we have is around philanthropy. So for us, it's going to be important to figure out how we can make a change in our communities, how we can help our communities all around us around this topic. And then once kind of overlaying all three of these work streams is how do we measure, how do we successfully measure that we're doing things right, that our means are correct.
Got it. So when it comes to diversity for your organization, how are you thinking about diversity when looking at specific underrepresented groups? So what I mean by that is I've spoken to some organizations and based off of recent events, a lot of companies are really focused on like racial and ethnic diversity. But then when I speak to other organizations, they want to make sure it's as broad as possible. And so they're even looking at whether it's mental diversity or people that might be on a spectrum. So it might be diversity from a ability, or I don't know if this is the right term, but maybe disability standpoint. I mean, there's so many different ways that people are looking at diversity. I'm curious to know, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think it's such a great point. You know, you can, you think about gender equality, racial ethnicity, sexual orientation, veterans. It's such a broad topic. And at the end of the day, it's we have philosophies, we have guiding principles in terms of where we want to treat each individual, you know, uniquely, fairly, ethically. And I feel like in our organization that principle is sound and the people we hire believe in it. But there's a reality that even with those principles, we need to make sure that we are driving people to Kenway that are diverse across all of those things that I mentioned, getting them in the door, right? And so it's why I mentioned recruitment being so important, because I think that's where our biggest struggle has been, is not so much the inclusion factor once people are in the door, but it's how do we increase the number of individuals across all of those areas that are coming and having interest in Kenway so that we can get them in the door. And I think as recent events, not unlike many companies, I think where we are falling short is around the racial aspect of things. And so we need to look at our means and say, why are we not having, because again, for us, we've identified that it's starting very at the top of what we call the recruitment funnel. We're not seeing a large number of applicants diverse in that are of diverse, you know, diverse backgrounds from a racial perspective. So we need to start there and figure out what is it about how we're recruiting that isn't bringing bringing diversity into our funnel.
When it comes to identifying diversity at the top of the funnel, are you identifying the lack of diversity by looking at how many people make it to the interview stage so you could see face to face exactly what the representation looks like? Or are you basing that off of EEO data that some candidates may or may not be filling out as they're going through the hiring process?
It's individuals that are making it to the face-to-face. And the reason that is we don't have, being a company as small as we are, we don't have, as of today, we don't have the means to say how, what does the landscape in terms of gender, racial, et cetera, of people actually applying, what does that look like? We don't have that data and those metrics today, but that's something that we are starting to look into. So are we even having success in the application process? So people coming to us to apply, what does that look like in terms of diversification?
What are the positions that you're hiring for? And the reason why I'm asking is because I'm assuming that that might actually determine how many candidates you're receiving, especially in a city like Chicago that is pretty diverse.
So the positions that we are hiring for, you know, consulting is such a broad term, right? Notably. So just to give a little bit more flavor is we have three core capabilities. So one is around what we call technology solution delivery. That is the things such as custom application development or implementation of vended systems. So really a high degree of technical background. The nuance of a consulting career is that what I'd layer on top of that is somebody who's very interested in moving from project to project, solving, you know, new problems on a day-to-day business, day-over-day, project-over-project. Two other capabilities include information insight. We also call that all things data. So that's moving people's data from similar to what your company does, but getting people's data in the right place so that they can actually leverage and use it to drive strategic decisions. So that can have a heavy technical component as well, but also traditional business side activities. And then the last capability we do is enterprise program leadership is what we call it. Sometimes I describe that as kind of the sister activities to the other two capabilities. So it's everything from a business side perspective that you would need to do to support your technical implementation. So program management, project management, change management, and business requirements, quality assurance. So those are the types of activities or the types of services that we provide and are looking for people that have interest in providing those services at a consulting organization.
Got it. Thanks for that background. So with that being said, have you been doing any recruiting specifically that's targeted to organizations that would refer or provide an applicant pool of underrepresented and diverse candidates?
We have just found a platform that we're going to partner with to do just that. And in addition, we are looking to partner with universities as well to really start right from the internship concept and graduating right out of school. So that falls within that recruitment work stream to change. You know, we always talk about our means, right? So let's look at the means and let's adjust them slightly to see how we can increase that candidate pool.
And from your perspective, being located in a pretty diverse city like Chicago, do you find that your efforts are just as difficult as other organizations? Or do you believe or even think that they should be easier being in such a diverse location?
I would certainly think just by virtue of, as you mentioned, being in such a diverse location, that the ability to successfully bring people to that top of the funnel should certainly be somewhat easier than if you're in a less diverse location. Again, so I think you need to look at it, if you're not seeing that success, look at the means and figure out what continuously say, well, what do we think we need to tweak to be more successful?
And as a small company, do you feel that you're competing, especially in an industry like consulting, with organizations like Accenture or Deloitte or other big consulting firms for the talent that may have a D&I arm? And so they have a lot more budget and can better identify underrepresented candidates, or that doesn't really come across as that much of a competition to you?
No, we definitely would be recruiting. You know, that again, it's all about scale, but the services we provide are, you know, spot on with those companies. So the skills, the interest, it's all very much aligned with those larger companies. And I, no, I guess I don't know. We'd probably have to ask candidates who are applying whether there's more of a draw for those larger companies because of the things that you mentioned. I would imagine, just depending on each individual. Again, we always talk about the uniqueness of each individual. I would, yes, you might get a different answer depending on who you talk to, but I would, when we do talk to just our candidates in general, you know, there's generally reasons that people go big versus go small. And I would think that diverse candidates would have that same reaction. That there's probably some people who would think big organizations have pros. Some of what you just mentioned, it'd be an eye arm, but others would view a small company and say, this is an area where I am going to be able to thrive because of the smallness, because I will be much closer to, you know, leaders of the company, and a small company is where I'll be able to influence and help drive some of these initiatives. So I would guess that it would be the latter, that I would think that people would probably, for their own individual reasons, be driven to a big versus small firm. I think that the key is that whether you're big or small, you need to let people know that this is an issue that you care about. This is something that is important to your company. And you can do that pretty easily to your candidates, whether you're big or small.
And I did want to ask, before we go to the next question, what is the platform that you're partnering with for other companies to know about?
It's called Norify.
Morify?
Norify, with Norify. An N. Norify, yes.
Great. And I would definitely put that in the show notes for others to get access to as well. And then the last question I have to ask, because we're an HR data company, we have to talk about metrics and measurement. When it comes to figuring out how much more diverse do you want to be, how are you looking at that? What are you using as your baseline today? What is that baseline? And how do you know if you're progressing towards a certain goal? And what is that goal?
So in full transparency, that's something we're continuing to analyze and figure out. In the past, we've mentioned this a couple of times, we are a company who are about means and not outcomes. But I can look around, and while we haven't defined a goal, I look around and I say, we're not meeting the mark. We're not where we need to be. So loosely, one of the things that we're doing is we're researching, what does the industry look like from a numbers perspective? What is the average number of, you know, when we look, whether it's women, veterans, racially, what are the number of people in this industry, period? And then how do we fall in comparison? But at a minimum, I want to be at or above industry averages across each of these.
One of the ways that I've been seeing smaller companies look at diversity goals is looking at the geographic makeup of the location where they're based. And so if you live in a city that is 3% African-American, then maybe you might not expect to have 25% of your workforce to be African-American. But then on the flip side, if you are at 1% African-American, Black, and you are in a city that's 40% African-American, then clearly you might be missing the mark. What do you think about that?
I think there's fairness, although it'll be interesting how it shifts in the remote world that we're in and likely will remain in. But again, I would just from a data and numbers perspective, if you live in an area where there is just a higher concentration, again, of whatever segment, right, of diversification that you're assessing, if you have a higher percentage of veterans available in your area, African American available in your area, I do think you should have absolutely better success at having higher diversification at your company. Assuming that you know, that concentration of people are also interested in the types of in the business that you're in, right? So technology versus advertising is an example. And so I think you need to look at that as well and say, where are things at from an industry perspective as well.
Got it. Yeah. There's a lot of work to happen in this area for all companies. So it's going to be really interesting to see how companies tackle this. But Amy, thank you so much for being such an awesome podcast guest and for sharing all your wisdom, knowledge, and experience around this, and for being so open and vulnerable around this and talking about areas that you've started in and you've already started to figure out the process, but then areas where you haven't and you're still thinking about, because that allows other HR leaders to understand that they don't have to have everything right and perfect, but that this is all a work in progress.
I think that you said it perfectly, because I think the more we can all say we're learning, it's a work in progress. That's why education has become so important for us to make sure that we are constantly tweaking what we're doing and getting things right in this area.
There you go. So thanks so much, Amy, for being on the show. Woo! Amy! So where can people find you and Kenway Consulting online?
So we are at kenwayconsulting.com. And for myself, amy.ermantrout@kenwayconsulting.com.
Awesome. And I'll definitely include that in the show notes. So for everyone out there listening, if you enjoyed this podcast interview, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because it shows that you care and that we're providing great content. Also, if this is your very first episode that you're listening to of our podcast, but now you're hungry for more, then please go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast. Actually, you can do that on any podcast player that you're listening to. Subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast so that you never miss another awesome episode. And all of you super awesome, amazing HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.